atheists, agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
The government, hug the government, love. The government, hug the government, love. The government, hug the government, love.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Northern Kentucky University political scientist Michael Baranowski. I'm joined today by my conservative counterpart, Cleveland area attorney Jay Carson. I thought we would start off by talking about a Supreme Court case that actually you have a particular interest in. You were, in fact, a friend of the court in this case.
I'm always a friend of the court.
There you go. So why don't you just kind of lead us
off? We're good friends.
Yeah.
So the case was Speech First versus Stands. Speech First being a free speech organization, and Stands being the president of Virginia Tech University. And the case challenged what's called the use of bias response teams, BRTs for short, which essentially were as a campus policy, college policy, shared by numerous colleges and universities across the country, whereby there is a task force that is set up to, if someone reports a bias incident, which is fairly vaguely defined, and you sort of know it if you see it, and they know it if they see it. The perpetrator may not know it and may not see it, and that's sort of the problem. At which point this task force can then intervene and correct the student's erring ways. So Speech First challenged this as a violation of the First Amendment in that it had a chilling effect on student discussion, student free speech. So for example, here's some bias incidents that were reported. Someone saw the words Saudi Arabia written on a whiteboard. That's one of the big ones. Someone reported someone for wearing a MAGA hat. Bias response team jumped into action. Those are sort of the problems that happened. And what was weird in this case is we ended up with sort of a punt by the Supreme Court and a weird procedural thing that, quite honestly, I wasn't really familiar with myself and had to ask someone who was smarter than me. But sort of what they call a GVR, which is a grant cert, vacate, and remand. So what ended up happening was, in this case, after the case was originally filed, and it went to the Common Pleas Court, then went to the Court of Appeals. During that period of time, Virginia Tech got rid of its BRT policy. And the argument then, okay, now it's moot. While that happened, the Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit issued an opinion upholding the use of the BRTs against a scathing and incredible dissent, which people should go read. You still can, because it's sort of, you know, sort of a dead letter. Now that's the next piece. At which point, the petitioner Speech First sought certiorari at the Supreme Court. So with that, what the court ended up doing was saying, okay, we're going to grant cert, and then we're going to say that the case was essentially moot, so we're vacating what the Court of Appeals said and remanding it to the trial court for if there's anything left, which I don't think there is. So it's sort of a mixed bag, right? It's kind of a win-win or win-win-lose type situation in that the Fourth Circuit's decision is no longer binding law, binding precedent. It did seem to conflict with a number of other circuits, but that's gone now. But at the same time, the Supreme Court is not making a major announcement on speech rights on campus and bias response teams. So that's the sum and substance of it. But Mike, your thoughts. Did Northern Kentucky have a bias response team?
No. Okay. I think there are two components of this, and maybe it would make most sense for us to talk about those separately. The first is what the Supreme Court did, and that gets into a discussion of mootness and judicial activism, perhaps. And then secondly, and this is maybe the more important part of the conversation, and the thing that I think that animates you, understandably so, more, is the underlying policy thing. Now, I would argue that Justice Thomas, in writing in dissent.
Oh, I should have said that. Yeah, Thomas dissented.
Thomas Alito joined.
Which is a weird sort of thing, saying the case should have gone forward. Again, it's a weird thing saying I'm granting the petition, but I would have granted it, but I dissent. And yeah, so.
Yeah, because Thomas and Alito wanted to hear the case, because even though there's actually no case or controversy, they still wanted to rule on it. And I think they're wrong about that. I mean, Justice Thomas wrote in the New York pistol case, right, saying, hey, if there's no way we can grant any effectual relief, then it's moot. And this was the case here. But he and Sam were just like, man, we really should talk about it. And I understand here. I understand his law. And he's right about his larger point. He says, you know what? Until there's some kind of final ruling on this, there are going to be what he calls a patchwork of First Amendment rights on college campuses. Right. And he's right about that. But that doesn't mean just because he's right about that, that the court can just sort of reach in and decide cases when there isn't a case. And so go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so I think the court was right to say there's just nothing here. Bring us an actual case. And okay, and I think if they actually had brought them an actual case, things would have turned out differently. And here's why, and this is why I think getting to the substance part of it. Now, the idea of a bias response team, I agree that bias response teams don't necessarily chill speech, and that's essentially what the appellate court said, right? Now, but I think that they can and often are constituted in such a way as they will have a chilling effect on speech. And Jay, in reading your brief, I generally don't read the amicus briefs, but I read all of yours, and I think you made a number of good points along those lines. And so maybe you can just kind of briefly explain why you feel that you argued, in fact, that a bias response team, which, by the way, in this case and in most of these cases, can take no actual disciplinary action. It's just sort of a administrative mechanism, if you will. Still, even so, still has or can have, and in the Virginia Tech case, did have a chilling effect on speech.
So first, before I jump into that, on the procedural piece, I think you're right on Thomas doing that. But the other danger, and we saw this, there was another New York gun case a year or two ago, and the name escapes me, right, where the court, what happened was the statute was challenged, at which point they said, oh, okay, we're appealing the law. And in this case, the mootness is, you know, the president said, okay, we're not enforcing that policy. We've gotten rid of that. Oh, and I totally promise we won't do it again. That's sort of the concern, right? That there could be these issues that could evade review. When if challenged, then you just say, okay, no, sorry, we'll stop that, and only to start up at some time in the future. So that's the concern on the procedural piece. But going to the merits of bias response teams. So the way these were constituted at UVA was that you would have, it's like, you know, the president and dean of students and all these folks. And yes, the bias response team did not in and of itself have the authority to take disciplinary action, but all of the people on the bias response team did. The Fourth Circuit argued that really no student should be reasonably chilled just because they happen to get a phone call from the president's office saying the president wants to sit down and talk about this bias incident with you. And I think that's ludicrous. The idea that, you know, what the president's going to call you in and tell you how much he appreciates your the ideological diversity that you bring to campus, that's not how the conversation is going to go.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
And this is, you know, again, college students against a major university and people who have their entire futures in their hands. And I think there's a tremendous imbalance of power, and to say it's not chilling that you would be called before a bureaucracy to account for, you know, essentially your speech, your actions is wrong. The other piece that I took issue with, and this is, I think, a bigger issue, even bigger than the constitutional issue, is what are universities supposed to be, and doesn't this type of atmosphere, bias response team, really prevent that, right? The way these bias response teams work, and Virginia's Hex was no exception, is they would circulate on websites the encouragements to, as in the terrorism, you know, mantra, see something, say something, right? Students are informed to or instructed, asked to inform on other students and say, oh, if you see something and something that you think is a bias response team, even if the alleged victim of the bias doesn't see a problem with it, if you do, you should report it. And I think it's, there's sort of the underlying, especially you should report people you don't like or don't share your political beliefs. And that really is of a piece with how a lot of totalitarian states operate and have operated. That's not to say that Virginia Tech is a totalitarian state, but
no, I will say that.
Why would you borrow those elements, right, from East Germany, asking everyone to watch and report on? It's the surveillance 360 kind of thing that is obviously chilling.
Well, I will say that I enjoyed the references to the East German Stasi and Mao's Cultural Revolution and repeated Orwell 1984 references that were just peppered throughout your entertaining and interesting
literary flourishes.
There were flourishes of plenty, and they were not tangential, just things you threw in there.
No, it wasn't gratuitous. It was making the point. And even so, here's the thing. I think you would agree I was fairly fair in the brief in saying, look, this is not East Germany, right? This is not a prison. This is not a communist China. But, you know, shouldn't we be concerned when we're relying on the same techniques the words that I think the folks in favor of this use, encourage pro-social behavior?
Yeah, right? Well, let me try to present at least a little bit of the other side, because I generally agree with you on this. But I will say this, because I've spent decades in higher education, and I've not just as a student and professor, but also dealing with a lot of administrative type concerns, because I've sort of been on that side of things, having to hear one of the things I was on the NKU's Board of Regents for 5.5 years. And as part of that, I heard a lot from our legal counsel about various cases and things and all kinds of things that I can't talk about for confidentiality reasons, but it made me appreciate sort of the legal environment and challenges faced by universities in a way that I didn't just as a professor. And I can certainly understand how any university would want to be aware of, let's say if someone's painting a swastika on it.
Yeah.
If I'm the president of the university,
or calling for intifada.
Yeah. Yes. I want to know about that. So in that sense, I certainly want to be informed of any incidents like that as soon as possible. And so I think there is a strong interest in the administration knowing about those things. And if somebody is being harassed in some way or intimidated, I think there is a strong interest in knowing about that as soon as possible. And I think that's part of the intent, certainly. And I think you would agree that universities have a strong interest in that.
Yes.
I also would say that now these bias response teams went beyond that in a number of ways, and some of the examples you pointed out, because of course they set it up so that they wanted to sort of cast a wide net. If you're not sure if something's bias, well, just report it and we'll kind of sort through it, right? We'll figure it out,
right?
You know, and I get
that. If you see something, say something,
right? And then just like in the terrorism thing, it's like, well, you know, it's not ticking, so I guess it's fine, right? I noticed a package on the subway, I'm sure it's fine. So again, it's so much is in the implementation, but you're right. For many students, just knowing that because of this anonymous reporting regime, that people are just going to report things and they're going to say like, geez, I don't want to have to deal with what they've called in before the dean of students and how's this going to affect my record, my career prospects. Now, that's not true for everyone. I mean, back in our days at Baldwin Walls, if the president had called me and you know me, I would have relatively like, yeah, bring it on, buddy. Yeah, come on, you know.
On my way,
yeah. That's right, you know. But most people are not like that, right? And so I think I have some sympathy, I guess is what I'm saying, for what a lot of these institutions are doing. But I think they're doing it in a way that does, in fact, cross a line. I'm glad that the Virginia Tech disbanded its team and that the president committed to not having a team. And I think there are ways of allowing an institution to be aware of these things and dealing with legitimate, serious threats without chilling speech, though it's always going to be, in some instances, a balance here. And that can be a tough balance to manage.
We hope you enjoyed this preview of our supporters exclusive midweek show. If you'd like to hear the rest of the episode, we hope you'll consider becoming a supporter. Supporters get ad-free access to all of our shows, membership in our Politics Guys Discord group where you can join in on the conversation, and other benefits at different levels of support. To become a supporter, go to patreon.com/politicsguys. You can also support us through Venmo, we're at Politics Guys, or through PayPal. You'll find all of our support links in the show notes as well as at politicsguys.com/support. And if you'd like to get the midweek show, but you're not in a position to become a financial supporter, that's not a problem. Just send me an email at mike@politicsguys.com, and I'll be happy to get that set up for you.